The Haynesboro hosts a two-day planning session on the future of LUTAC Dock. And can crabapples offer insight to global warming? It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Margaret Friednauer. Those stories and more up next. The Haynesboro is holding a two-day workshop this week on the future of the LUTAC Dock. The dock needs major repairs, according to a recent engineer's report, to keep functioning. The borough has already made some temporary fixes to keep the facility working in the meantime. The dock services the weekly supply barge and fuel barges. After the engineer's report was released recently, borough manager Dave Sosa said the community needed to determine what it wanted from the dock structure in the future. Determining the needs and goals for the dock will guide the borough in how to fix, improve, or expand the facility, he said. To help in that planning process, Sosa contacted the University of Alaska's Center for Economic Development, which is facilitating the two-day session. The borough invited about two dozen so-called stakeholders from various government and community organizations, meant to give a broad representation of the community. Interim Community and Economic Development Director Leslie Ross is helping organize the event. She said the facilitators from the university will train participants on a model called strategic doing.
Strategic doing basically brings together a large group of diverse people to work together on a complex project, which is our LUTAC Dock. So it brings together different groups of the community and different people in the community to come together with a plan and a focus for a big project.
While none of the invitees from Haynes' legislative district or Alaska's congressional delegation are able to attend, there will be several participants from state agencies, including the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority and Alaska Division of Economic Development. Businesses like Constantine Metal Resources, Delta Western, and Alaska Marine Lines will also attend, and local organizations like Tokchinook Watershed Council and Lynn Canal Gill Netters and the Chamber of Commerce will participate. There will also be people from several borough committees and boards, as well as assembly members and borough staff. On Thursday, the group will have an introduction to strategic doing training for the assembly, borough staff, and local representatives. On Friday, all the invitees will have a forum and planning session for LUTAC Port Development. Sessions on both days take place at the Chilkat Center. The public is welcome to observe the sessions, but participation is limited to invitees. Unaffiliated with the borough's event, the private local group Haynes Port Development Council is also hosting a public discussion on the LUTAC Dock Thursday night from 6:30 to 8 p.m. at the Chilkat Bakery. Scientists say that oral histories have become a valuable resource in their research of Southeast Alaska and Northwest British Columbia Indigenous peoples. Current research that centers on the intersection of tradition and modern science were the subject of recent lectures organized by the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute in Juneau. A multi-year research project that's underway has focused on the excavation of Yakutat Bay area seal camps. The principal investigator is Arctic anthropologist Aaron Crowell, Alaska director of Smithsonian Institution's Arctic Studies Center in Anchorage.
Using radiocarbon analysis, we can actually date some of these events that are described in oral traditions. And it goes the other way, too. The rich cultural content of oral tradition informs us about the kinds of things that we find, including this arrow point from the Old Town site on Knight Island. It's probably about 500 years old.
Crowell shows how migrations, starting in 800 AD, of the Iyak and Atna people from the north and the Tlingit from the south, ended up in Yakutat Bay. The people followed the harbor seal population up into the bay during the retreat of the Great Glaciers, now known as Hubbard and Malaspina.
And is the decline of harbor seals due to overhunting, to climate change, or other factors? The answer may lie in the archaeological and environmental record of human-seal interactions over the last centuries.
Crowell describes the recent excavation of portions of house or tent structure foundations and a midden from three different seal camp sites in Yakutat Bay as part of research funded by the National Science Foundation. Some of the recovered artifacts are as much as 800 years old and include microblades, carving chisels, knives, and scrapers for processing seal skins. Other items include tiny beads, a halibut hook barb, decorative copper, portions of a seal hunting harpoon, and evidence of seal oil rendering. Crowell says charcoal samples can be dated with radiocarbon analysis, animal bones can reveal subsistence practices, and seal bone DNA can be analyzed to show patterns of the marine mammal's migration. Water temperatures during the Little Ice Age can be determined with stable isotope analysis of shell fragments.
And so a site like this is, where these bones are very well preserved. It's a cultural archive, but it's also a biological archive that can show us how climate and maritime animal populations have changed over time.
Crowell says the seal hunts likely range from several hundred seals to several thousand seals a year for commercial and subsistence uses. Crowell says the seal population in Southeast Alaska at one point was enormous. It was so big that 10,000 seals were taken in 1920 without affecting the overall population. That population is now down as much as 80%. But Crowell does not believe that hunting was the cause for the decline. Participating in his research was Judy Ramos from Yakutat. She's currently an assistant professor of Alaska Native Studies and Rural Development at University of Alaska Fairbanks and is a PhD student in Indigenous Studies. Even with the recent decline in population, Ramos says the harbor seal remains a crucial part of the Yakutat culture and diet.
In 2001, I did a subsistence survey, and we harvested 262 harbor seals by 36% of the native households, and it was used by 78% of the native households. So it's a very important part of our subsistence resources. In the past, it was much more important because moose and deer are new to the Yakutat area.
Oral histories can reveal a lot about traditional seal hunting training and techniques, processing of seal and hide, and stewardship of the land and conservation practices. Ramos also says oral history interviews provided documentation of the environmental history or migration history behind place names.
Four of the place names are identified as Aleutusupiaq. 14 of the place names are identified as Iyak, and the rest of the place names are Tlingit.
Another researcher is incorporating oral histories and traditions as she focuses on the Northwest Coast people's relationship to a common fruit, the crabapple, and whether it can be used as a keystone species for determining the effects of climate change on travel and subsistence. Victoria Wiley de Icaveria is a PhD candidate at the University of Oxford, who was also a visiting scholar at the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute.
So ecological keystone species is a concept that was developed quite a few years ago about a species that has a larger impact on its environment in proportion to the number of organisms that are there. So maybe it's not the most common species, but it's a pivotal species for other species depending on it.
Wiley de Icaveria is an ethnobiologist who studies interactions between people and plants, animals, and the environment. She spent the latter half of this summer and early fall doing field work in Southeast Alaska and coastal British Columbia. Although salmon may be an example of a prime keystone species, Wiley de Icaveria decided to focus on the Pacific crabapple. Indigenous peoples may have a specialized view of crabapples.
From looking at the data in the literature, they were important in trade and as both a food, material goods, and medicine. And they were also mentioned in mythologies. There are quite a few stories where people would be eating crabapples at feasts, or there was one story where people were running away from some invaders and they threw their comb behind them and it turned into a crabapple thicket.
The tree bark can be made into a tincture or tea or a salve for skin irritations. The hardwood can be crafted into hooks or adze handles. As many as 37 indigenous groups from Alaska to Oregon use the crabapple in some way. Just one species may be recognized by botanists, but indigenous groups have identified at least five separate varieties based on their location or appearance of the tree and fruit. Wiley de Icaveria wants to determine the cultural significance of crabapples while using Western science to determine the botanical and ecological characteristics of the different varieties. She also hopes to determine how things like climate change, logging, and development affects the people's harvesting and processing of their food. The weekly luncheon lectures in Juneau were organized by the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, the nonprofit organization devoted to promoting culture and educational programs for Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshians. For KHNS News, I'm Margaret Friednauer. Special thanks to Matt Miller for help with this report. Thanks for joining us for your local news on KHNS. We appreciate your support.